The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. Today I'm talking with certified financial planner Cole Hammack, and also joining us for today's topic is Brandon Breeze from McCurdy & Associates, a professional accounting firm in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome. Glad to see you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
Thanks for
it.
Taking the time to come visit us today. I know you've been kind of trying to come up for air this time of year, right?
It's
probably pretty crazy.
That's right. It's been crazy.
Doing taxes, handling people's taxes from all over Columbus. This is going to be a great conversation about that. We're going to actually hone in on sole proprietors. So this is for you out there. If you would, Brandon, let's kind of first tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your company.
Yeah. My name's Brandon Breeze, from Hilliard, Ohio. Lived there pretty much my whole life. I've been with McCurdy & Associates for 15 years. Love what I do. Love the people I work with. Have a great family. Beautiful wife. Two great kids. Carter and Bennett. Carter's 8. Bennett's 2. That's funny that he's Bennett.
Yeah. Cole's over there smiling because he's got a new one, too.
Yeah,
he's relating to you.
Yeah. So it's
you guys can commiserate later about the story. He's got some good stories for
the
you.
The joys, yeah.
The joys of parenting.
That's really it. I mean, just enjoy being with family.
You sound like a normal person.
Yeah, just a normal guy who
likes numbers.
Loves numbers.
Have you always liked numbers?
For the most part, yeah. I was always what I thought was really good at math, even though accounting's not quite math. Uh-huh. It's just knowing where numbers go rather than, you know, being really good at multiplication. But, yeah, I mean, numbers have been my thing. I wasn't big into science. I wasn't, you know, not the best at writing the best essays. But, numbers are my thing.
Very organized.
Sounds like we have a very similar pathing.
That's
kind of where my mentality was. Like, I love numbers. I love math.
Yeah.
Didn't care too much for the other subjects. I just found accounting boring. So I'm excited for this conversation so you can prove me wrong.
Sure. Well, I hope I can.
I actually hate numbers. So.
Okay.
So
this is
you? So, the one that won't let us talk about numbers. And the
All right. Well, of course, it's important for me to say that John E. Sestina is not a tax advisory firm, and we are not CPAs. So please always check with your tax advisor about any personal or business tax issue. Having said that, Brandon, keeping great records and creating strong processes, at least in our world, is really critical to growing with ease. So as you're dealing with your clients who are entrepreneurs, sole proprietors, what kind of best practices do you guys recommend to these people when it comes to record keeping?
Yeah, keeping records is very important, especially when it comes to tax time. What I really try to tell them is don't wait till the end of the year or the first of the year to try to get all your records pulled together. It's better to – I'm a big spreadsheet guy, as I'm sure you are too.
Oh, yeah. Have to be.
It's just what we do. I try to tell clients to, on a monthly basis, keep track of what's coming in and what's going out because it's too hard at the end of the year to try to pull everything together and be accurate. And, and accuracy is the key, especially when with reporting income. Mm-hmm. You don't want – anything to be erroneous on your tax return, obviously. Mm-hmm. As far as, and we don't know as tax preparers, we need you, the client, to do your best to keep all your records straight. And by doing that, like I said, Excel spreadsheets on a monthly basis is a great way to do it. Checking your bank statements, make sure your cash agrees after the end of all of that.
Do you generally recommend having like a separate bank account or a separate credit card?
Yes, absolutely. That's huge. we'll run into clients that try to intermingle it, and it becomes a big, big problem. Mm-hmm. So having that separate bank account lets you know this is what comes in, this is what comes out, and this is what I need to report. And then leave it up to us to, let's say, yeah, this is a good expense that you can report. Yeah.
Good and, solution.
Yeah, absolutely.
So leave the shoebox at home, is what
please,
you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can handle it, but, you know,
the
bigger,
prefer not
the,
to,
bigger the shoebox, the bigger the fee.
Yeah, amen.
Yeah, right.
Aside from spreadsheets, for somebody who wants to maybe use technology, are there resources that people have to be able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, depending on how big you are, you can get QuickBooks. QuickBooks is a good one to report all your income and expenses. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's big in the accounting world, and they have the QuickBooks Online, and they have the QuickBooks Mobile that everything just kind of syncs right in. So it comes from your bank account straight into your QuickBooks, and then you just kind of have to tell what this expense is, you know, this gas bill or this fuel bill. Is this an expense to the company? Is this a personal? What is that? So,
and that would, that seems like that would be, as cut and dry as it is, it would be difficult and a challenge for people to understand how important it is to not to co-mingle their accounts and their records. I mean, the next point we're going to talk about is understanding tax filing requirements. The first component is to be able to know where all your stuff is. Is that a challenge when you're talking to your clients and getting them to understand how important that is?
Certain clients, absolutely. I mean, there's a big spectrum with mm-hmm. what we work with. We've got those that know to a T where everything is, mm-hmm. and we have those who just kind of bring stuff into us, mm-hmm. or even we go off bank statements and just say, hey, what's this, what's this, what's this? And even though they did all of that transaction throughout the year, it's hard for them. Like, that's why it's very,
that's
very
stressful.
Important. Yeah, and
it's
stressful on us,
it's
stressful on them, and we want to get every expense that we can for them to help bring their income down. But if they don't know, we don't know either.
Yeah, and I know, and I can speak for Cole, I think, when I say in our business too, accountability, you know, being present in the relationship, not just, it's like going to the doctor and saying, fix me.
Sure.
You know, what skin in the game do you have to making sure this is working for you, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
I've told more than one client that we're accountability buddies. We're in this together throughout the year.
Yep.
So definitely
say that
try to keep everyone
fast
on track. I won't, not on this.
All right, back to tax filing requirements. So, Brandon, what are the key differences in your mind, in your world, in the tax filing requirements for sole proprietors compared to other business structures? Or
yes.
Is there a difference?
So, yeah, there is a difference. Sole proprietors, the filing requirements, they're filed on their individual return under Schedule C. That reports all the income and expenses to get to your net income, which is what's taxed by your ordinary tax rate as well as the self-employment tax. So that compared to like a partnership and S-Corp have separate tax returns, and those are bigger businesses. They don't technically have to be. Partnerships are two or more people. S-Corporations are, you can be a sole member S-Corp, but they have different tax deadlines. Those deadlines are March 15th, and they can be extended to September 15th. To where the individual tax deadline is April 15th, mm-hmm. which also can be extended to October 15th. So,
mm-hmm. You have any questions for that?
Not that one in particular. I think that's straightforward.
Is there a difference in the reporting process, like the documents and the other than the
not
time,
really?
The
it's keeping track of your income and expenses on both sides.
It's cut and dry.
Yeah, it's pretty cut and dry.
I guess maybe one thing I will ask, and I think we might get into this one a little bit later, but I know the focus today is more so on the sole prop. So that's why I didn't have any specific questions as far as the other entities. But I know on the sole prop side, kind of an extension of that might be an LLC.
Yes.
Is that something you would traditionally recommend having or just kind of go out, do your own thing, that's fine?
With the LLC,
it
kind of, yeah, the LLC kind of gives you a little bit leeway in turn, like if you get sued or something, it's not in your personal name, it's within the LLC. So that's kind of what that does. It's taxed all the same,
exactly,
and reported
right.
all the same. So you just have to go out and get an EIN and file with the Secretary of State.
EIN is what? Is that like
employer
Social Security?
Identification number for the company,
okay.
yeah, compared yep. to a Social Security, rather it being in your Social Security number.
Okay,
so
great.
Generally speaking, is that something you would advise doing or suggest someone do? Or
yeah,
is there
absolutely.
A specific
I don't think it ever is a bad thing for them to do. Absolutely.
Okay. So as a sole proprietor or an entrepreneur, quarterly estimated taxes are a big deal. We want to talk about the importance of how to estimate those tax payments, how to calculate them, when the payments are due. How do people properly estimate quarterly tax payments, especially when the incomes can vary throughout the year?
Yeah, and this is a big topic for us. So each year we try to do at the end of, you know, come this time, let's just say you're filing your tax return and you made a lot more money this year. Well, that comes with a bigger liability. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we take what their liability is and safe harbor them. So we take that liability, multiply that by 110%, and then make the quarterly taxes off of that 110%. That keeps them safe. Now, like you said, income fluctuates in whatever industry and real estate professionals, whatever. So throughout the year, we tell clients, hey, if you have a big commission or if you get, you're making a lot more money, let us know. We can run that, bump up your quarterly estimate so you're not getting a huge tax bill at the end of the year. Because that's the goal. You don't want to get dumped on with a huge tax bill and then have to make a quarterly estimate at the same time. That ends up becoming, you know, an eye-opener for a lot of these clients.
And from the financial planning perspective, we talk about living expenses, which go hand in hand with what you're talking about. Cole,
sure.
You
sure.
See this a lot where you've got fluctuating income from mm-hmm. somebody who's got a sole proprietorship or a small business. How do you tell people to manage mm-hmm. the influx?
I think first and foremost, it's really evaluating goals. So what do we need just from a traditional month-to-month basis? Depending on the type of business, especially for those feast or famine sort of businesses. So I usually think of real estate mm-hmm. or realtors in that particular aspect. Do we have a sufficient cash reserve in place? So do we have enough to live? Do we have the cash reserve? And then if we have excess beyond that, so hopefully we're already making our estimated payments mm-hmm. along the way, then we can start looking into other opportunities. So maybe aligning with the CPA. I know we'll talk about business retirement plans a little bit. I think that's on the radar for today. So those sorts of things or fun stuff, right? You know, you're working hard, you've earned it. So I think it's all very much goal-based and entity/business type-based as well to sure. really figure out what makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a conversation, but yeah. One thing I do want to get some clarification on, because I know the answer, but I don't know if everyone knows the answer, is that the 110% that you had referenced mm-hmm. in terms of defining that estimated payment aspect.
Sure.
Why the 110, and what are we trying to avoid with that?
Yeah, we're trying to avoid getting the 110 is a safe harbor, and it's trying to avoid penalty and interest.
Mm-hmm. Come tax time. I need you to zzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzz
was asking.
110% of your current year liability. So let's just keep it easy. Say your current year total tax for the end of the year is $10,000. Mm-hmm. Multiply that by 110%. That's what we're going to make your quarterly estimates to be.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So the reason being,
yeah, the reason being penalty and interest. You want to avoid penalty and interest in giving, you know, the IRS even more money than you have to.
Is there a traditional calculation for the penalties? Like, as a percentage, how much do you generally see of the liability that is?
It varies on when you make your payments, to be honest. If you're making your payments late, your liability is going to go up higher. It's based on, because they want them quarterly, the 15th of April, June, September, mm-hmm. even into January. So they really, 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 it's really, really based on when you make those payments. The later you make those payments, the more your penalty and interest is going to be.
Timely, be on top of it, communicate with the CPA, all good stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, talking about deductions, what are some of the commonly overlooked deductions or credits that are out there that people can take advantage of?
Sure, like the big deduction that I'm seeing a lot now is home office. A lot of people are working from home. So you can take a portion of your mortgage interest, real estate taxes, utilities, homeowners insurance, and you base that off of the square footage of the room in your home. So say your office divided by the square footage of the entire home, and then you get that percentage of those expenses that I mentioned. Another one is mileage. Keep tracking your mileage. But again, realtors, it's really big for them. They drive around a lot. It has to be business related. You can't, you know, drive to Colorado to see your aunt and deduct that as business expense. But
what if you're selling your aunt's home?
Well, then yes, I guess technically yes, that would work.
Make plans.
That's right. That's right. Tax planning.
Yes, exactly.
All right, great. So retirement planning is the next commentary, exploring retirement planning options for sole proprietors. There's a bunch of them. It's letter soup. So I don't know if we want to go through those, but
sure.
I kind of want to take them one at a time and then talk about what factors people should consider when they're selecting that particular choice.
Sure.
So we start with SEP IRAs, for instance.
So SEP IRAs are like super easy to set up.
What does SEP stand for?
Self-employed pension. So what that is, it's very inexpensive to set up, which is for small businesses that don't have tons of cash. That's a pro.
You set that up at a bank? Where do you, or a brokerage house? Well, where do you go to do that?
Yeah, to like financial institution.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just Ameritrade, stuff like that, those type of places. There's limitation on what you can contribute based off for self-proprietors, your net income. So if you have a great year, you can contribute a lot. If you have a down year, you can't. So that's kind of the flaw to it, to that. And there is limitations of how much you can, too. So I think it's up to like $66,000 that you can contribute to that.
What about a solo 401k?
It's pretty much like it's a solo. It's exactly what it is. It's just a 401k
one
for
person.
One person.
Mm-hmm. Can't have any employees in that situation.
No. Okay. It is a employee and employer contribution can contribute versus SEP's just an employer contribution. So obviously there's an employee limitation of how much you can contribute and then a total contribution of what you can contribute. So,
okay.
I'm sure, I think we're probably going to ask about one more, but between the two, just kind of generally speaking, is there one that you maybe lean more toward than the other?
It depends on the the size of the company and
how much
their cash flow.
Yeah,
and what they can handle. Yeah. I see a lot of SEP, especially for self-prop. So,
the SEP would give you an opportunity if you're a solo. The SEP gives you the opportunity if you decide later you want to bring somebody on staff, you can.
Correct.
It's the best
correct.
Of all worlds, right?
And like in our tax software, we can let the client know how much based off of their net income they can contribute. So that's nice to them too. So they're like, what's my max contribution? We kind of run it through our software. And then it spits it out, and they can decide I can contribute up to this, or I can contribute less.
So why would a simple IRA be a good thing?
So like at our firm, we have a simple IRA. Again, very, very easy. Mm-hmm. It's pretty inexpensive. You can't contribute as much to it. There is matching. The employer does match it. How that compares to the others, I think they're pretty consistent, really. Or it's pretty consistent almost with the 401k, but you can have multiple employees.
Ah, okay. That's the differentiation.
I imagine it's nice, too, compared to the SEP, since the employees are making the contributions.
Correct, I can contribute, and it can get matched by the employer as well, compared to it's just the employer putting money in, in the SEP.
How can tax planning support the growth of a sole proprietorship when reinvesting profits?
Back into the business, you mean?
Yes.
Like buying stuff for the business?
Right. Reinvesting profits, you're capitalizing on your tax incentives, and how does that align with long-term business goals? Cole, is that something that was a financial planning question?
I think that might be a little bit more tax planning, but I'm thinking maybe even just the 179 deduction, for example.
Yeah, the 179 deduction's a nice one at the end of the year for clients, because they can expense the whole asset that they purchase, which brings the net income down, and that's what you pay tax on. So if you have the cash flow is kind of the biggest thing in that situation. You have to have the cash to buy the asset. I mean, technically you can lease the asset too, but it's still a liability on your company's books. Mm-hmm. So
you see these little pop-ups everywhere, you know, cookie stores and clothing stores, boutiques and so forth. And, you know, how do these sole proprietors time their income and expenses to minimize their liability throughout the year especially if it's a seasonal business, you know, and there's a feast or famine in the income aspect of it.
Yeah, that can be hard.
What kind of stuff can they do?
Yeah, when it's seasonal, for example, let's just say a lawn care business. You can't really cut grass when there's snow on the ground in Ohio. So they make all their income in the summertime. But a good thing for that they can do, again, is they can, if they do new lawnmowers or they need new weed eaters, stuff like that, they know what their income is going to be come November, December. So they can say, wow, I made a lot of money this year. Let's we purchased a new mower. We need a new mower. 179 it, bring our tax liability down. And it really, really helps at the end of the year as far as tax that you're paying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always think when you say seasonal, like Spirit Halloween,
That's a great example. Like
they don't exist until they do, and then they're everywhere.
That's a great
example.
It's crazy.
So I like imagine short-term leases. Is that an option that could be beneficial for kind of those pop-ups, do you think?
Yes and no, sure. I would say. It really just depends. Again, yeah. You know, if it depends on what you need and what you have. Yeah. So it's tough to say if that's as beneficial or not.
Sure.
Well, I want to knock on wood right now. Being audited is no fun by the IRS, obviously. So let's help people learn about some common red flags that may trigger an audit. Let's give the best way to proactively avoid that. So tax compliant tips and pitfalls.
Yeah. So the best way to avoid an audit is to not show a huge loss year after year after year after year, because there's no way you could truly be in business if you're showing, you know, $30,000-$40,000 losses each and every year. That tells me one of two things. You're not reporting your income, or you're reporting false expenses on that income. So that's going to just be a huge red flag to the IRS. Reporting the correct income. A lot of these sole props receive 1099s. From these different companies. So you want to make sure your revenues match up with these 1099s. If it's off, you're going to get an IRS letter stating so.
It's a scary thought.
Yep. And another thing kind of with that, for the sole props, is remembering to 1099 people as well. Say you have someone do work for you.
That's a great
contractors.
Point.
I run into it a lot. A lot of people, did you 1099? I see you have contract expense of $30,000, $40,000. Did you contract, or did you 1099 these contractors? No, I said, well, by law, you have to 1099 these contractors.
You can't just pay them under the table?
Yeah, correct. So, and then take expense for it is the case. That's a big red flag.
Where do they go, to the IRS.gov website to get those forms, or to their accountant?
Yeah, you can do them online. Your accountant can definitely do them. We do 1099 work. There's plenty of resources. Like, if you get that QuickBooks that we mentioned before, you can actually do them straight through QuickBooks. So it's really nice, and it just kind of flows through and files everything for you.
So you're saying anybody who supplements your business, right? So if you're, let's say you have a dog grooming business, you know, your people who sell your shampoo, or, I mean, how does that work, a 1099?
People who, like, do services for you. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have employees, but you can have, let's just say construction. Mm-hmm. You have a construction company. You have a bunch of individuals that go out and work for you and do the labor. Well, you need to 1099 those individuals because they need to report the income that you paid them. And the IRS would have no idea how to do so without a 1099.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're taking an expense for it, someone else should be taking the income for it.
Mm-hmm. What's charitable giving look like when you're sole prop? I mean, is that a Cole question or a Brandon question?
It's
or both?
Both. And unfortunately, it's tough right now, because with a sole prop that flows onto your Schedule A, which is on your individual tax return, and getting above the standard deduction right now is pretty difficult because it's so high with the new tax, with the newer tax law, that I'm noticing a lot of people aren't itemizing deductions and they're taking the standard deduction. Now, if you make a large charitable contribution, then yes, that can help increase your itemized deductions to where you do itemize, which is bringing your AGI down.
I come at it from an approach, and again, maybe that's just maybe my perspective. Mm-hmm. So yours may be different. So I'm curious. You should only give to charity because you want to,
correct?
Not to save taxes.
Yeah,
right?
and that's what's the fine line between tax accountant.
So many people ask,
and being, you know, from your heart, which is why you're making a charitable contribution. So it's hard to say, oh, don't contribute because it doesn't do anything for you on tax benefit. In the end, that's not why you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd never sit here and tell someone that they shouldn't. But the idea is, if someone's asking, like, hey, should I give more so that I can save in taxes? In my mind, that doesn't really make
sense.
Correct. Right?
That is 100% correct.
Okay.
Can we give some examples of the types of tools that are out there for charitable giving through their taxes?
I mean, you can donate to church. You can, I mean, this is more on the individual side because it's sole prop.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's all the same. What you can do is you can donate like stock too at the fair market value. Sometimes that's a way to do it, depending. But you're really not seeing a lot of it lately because of what the standard deduction is.
Fast forward a little bit. Let's say the business was hugely successful. You're still a sole prop, but you're in a position where you can actually sell the business. is there an opportunity for charity on the other side of that?
Not necessarily. Well, you're receiving more cash, I guess, if you're selling the business,
yeah,
right? So
yes,
technically you could donate some, yeah, of that if your heart desired, mm-hmm, to do so. But it's not a huge tax savings,
true,
right now.
Right. Exactly. Gotcha.
All right. So tax law changes. This is always a fun conversation, mm-hmm, and certainly part of our business too on some level. We're not CPAs, but we do get a lot of questions from our clients about tax law changes and the updates. Can you generally speak to any recent tax law change or update that might impact the tax obligations of sole props?
Sure. There's a big one right now. It's not really a tax change. It's more for businesses. It's the BOI registration. I know I kind of talked off camera, yeah, before a little bit about this.
What's the BOI stand
for? It's
the
Beneficial Ownership Institution. What you have to do is anyone who is a S-Corp partnership, sole prop, LLC, anything. If you're registered with Secretary of State, you have to register for this with the FinCEN, which is the Financial Crime Network or something.
Sure.
Yeah. All these different abbreviations. And what that's trying to do is prevent this money laundering. That's kind of becoming a big thing.
Yep.
It just gives the government a way to kind of track who's in charge of these different entities.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of the big thing that we're worried now, because we got a lot of these clients, especially sole props, that really have no idea that this is even a thing. And there's going to be some pretty big penalties if you don't file this. It's due, I believe, at the end of the year for those who have been in business before 24. If you're starting a new one in 24, you have like 30 to 60 days to file this. So it's a pretty serious thing that we're trying to push as accountants to all of our clients, but it's going to be difficult.
I think maybe another one, this was tied to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that passed in 2018, but I think we referenced the 179 deduction. Are they scaling that one back? Am I recalling that correct?
No, that's the bonus depreciation that they're scaling
okay,
back. So
gotcha. How's
it used
that work?
To be 100% yeah, bonus depreciation. 23, it dropped to 80%, and then in 2024, it's dropping to 60%. So basically, take an asset, you can take 80% of it as an expense in 2023, and then depreciate the over the life.
I see.
To
gotcha.
Now, in the current year, 24, it's 60% you can take as an expense, and then depreciate
progressively
it. Yes,
getting less
yeah,
favorable.
And then I don't know where it goes after 24. I think it even drops even yeah, more. So
okay.
Well, this has
times
been
are changing.
This has been enlightening. I feel like I'm sitting in a college accounting 101.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thank you very
you're
much
for
spending time with us.
This
has been
yeah,
enlightening, and hopefully it's given our viewers, our followers, some really good information to have in their back pocket. Diligent record keeping is vital for you as a sole proprietor to track finances precisely, and great tax planning optimizes your efficiency and minimizes. We don't want to minimize. We want to minimize the liabilities.
Amen.
Yeah. So remember to do your research and seek the help of the professionals. Thanks to Brandon Breeze from McCurdy & Associates. We hope that you'll come back and listen to our podcast. We're glad you tuned in. We are Managing to Be Wealthy.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.